Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Okay, hello and welcome to a very exciting installment of Left on Red. It's our international special.
So just before we get into today's international special, I'd just like to welcome our first ever guest on the Left on Red podcast. He's a dear mate of ours both and a really, really big gooner. Welcome to the show, Rafa Ribe.
It is an honour to be here. Me and Costa are going to be travelling to South America. He'll be visiting me and we can be speaking to some gooners around the world.
In advance of our new format where we're going to be discussing some memories of Arsenal that we're fond of, we thought it'd be quite interesting to get a different perspective on the last section of Arsenal matches, so in between the two international breaks, from our guest, considering we've got a guest for the first time. So we thought we'd have a chat about Mikel Arteta, where the team are at and how the results have been and what it's looking like for the fixtures up and coming.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting point in the Arsenal season because obviously we start the season terribly and everyone was Mikel Arteta out. And there was a lot of negativity around the club and I don't think we were playing at the level where we can get to and where we are normally. And then obviously three wins on a bounce, maybe not the most elegant wins and convincing, but then that Tottenham game 3-1, I mean that's about as convincing as it gets. But I thought the Brighton game was really interesting because it gave us an opportunity to see kind of where we are at football club. We're not that team that's going to get popped 5-0 by City, nor are we that team that's going to get, you know, 15 shots off in the first half against Tottenham. And we weren't brilliant at Brighton. I do think we can get better, but I thought it gave us a good insight into where we are at a club. And I mean, Brighton are a good team, so it wasn't a terrible result.
No, they are a good team, and I think you're right. It sort of balanced the weight.
Yeah, it was a bit of a shame that was the result that came just before the international break, because I think it brought back a little bit of negativity. Given that, I mean, if you look at it as a four-game sort of stint, you got 12 points available and we got 10. And given that in there's Burnley away, Brighton away, Spurs at home.
I mean, I think if you change the order of those fixtures and we got two wins and a bounce against Norwich and Burnley, so we then drew to a good Brighton team who are on form, who've got four wins and a draw from their first five games or whatever it was, and then we beat 3-1
and beat Spurs,
then it's completely different.
It's a different atmosphere. Yeah, so it was a bit annoying that...
In some ways, I prefer it the way it's happened, though, so that we sort of have a calmness and a balance to how we're discussing it. Because if we'd just come off a 3-1 win against Spurs, some of the comments we might be saying might be a little bit fed out of excitement rather than what we're really thinking about where we are.
And that's what I'm saying, it's good to get that kind of middle point of where we are at a team. We're not the Arsenal of old, we're not going to be popping teams 3-1, but nor are we the team that's going to get popped 5-0. And I think it was good to get our fans, our expectations to be realistic and to have a good understanding of where we are.
Yeah, I think we were probably guilty of a bit of excited views, I'd say.
That's what you want. B, I don't think we were overly ridiculous with any of our comments. I think we said everything with nuance, with balance, in order to create a reflection of the excitement just after a massive win, but also in perspective of the context of where the club is right now.
Yeah, no, and I think it's probably the Brighton game, along with actually, I think it might probably end up looking like quite a good point at the end of the season. It's quite a necessary sort of back down to earth result.
I think the clean sheet is the big positive point that we can take away from the game. Because yes, we drew. Yes, it was really a point game rather than two dropped.
Yeah.
Which... And I think I said the same thing when we lost to Brentford and it was a horrific performance. I didn't enjoy it at all. But a lot of teams were going to drop points at the stadium. And the same thing, it's the same case for Brighton. And it's a decent point and you take that in the chin.
I think what would be quite interesting to ask is because we've been very praising of our back five at the moment and thinking that they're really a foundation for us to kick on with. And I was just wondering what your thoughts on those back five were.
Right, but I'm really impressed. Ramsdale's obviously really juxtaposed as Leno, who's kind of that German, who's calm, kind of collected, doesn't speak much. Ramsdale's out there. He talks to the defence, and it's been really refreshing. You think it's those six new signings, three of them with White, Ramsdale, and Tomiyasu have really brought fresh air, and it's just a feeling of excitement and renewed positivity.
Yeah,
and I think that's been really.
Do you know what I think we should do? We didn't plan this, but I think it'd be quite interesting considering the fact that we do player ratings after each match. I think we should do RAS player ratings after the four games in between.
Look at this!
Yeah, it's off the cuff.
Entrepreneurial.
Is this what we get on the Left and Red
Podcast? This is what you get. You get live action.
We're just bouncing off each other.
This is so fluid, and
it's the energy that Raf brings to the table.
Brings the player ratings energy.
About player ratings, it's when you change the game.
Yeah. Player ratings, you think Raf.
Yeah.
Right, so let's get Raf's verdict on our starting 11 and a few players that have been in and out of the team and how they've done in the last four games. We'll start with our new number one, Aaron Ramsdale.
I absolutely love the guy. When we score a goal, he celebrates with the fans. That's been really big at the Emirates, and it's been part of the good energy and the complete change. So I think Ramsdale celebrating with the fans, really making us feel involved, has been massive. But not only that, he's been commanding. He's been, and as I said, contrasting to Leno, he dominates his box, he talks his defenders. I give him a 9 out of 10.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'll just add that his playing out from the back's been better than Leno as well.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Tomiyasu,
I give an 8.
Yeah.
He's been dominating. He dominates his defenders. He had Son on toast. Son didn't want any of him. Son's a player who really, he goes at players, he drives at them, but he, from the first minute, he knew that Tomiyasu wasn't going to have any of that. He had him on toast. But he's not going to stay at that level all season. And no. Obviously, it's a new signing. You get that buzz, and when you really kick off well, then that stays for a while. It's not going to stay forever. So I hope that our fans have patience with him. I've also been impressed with his technical ability. With both feet, he can ping a ball. I'll give him an 8.
Just based on the discussion that we were prior having about Brighton, how that reflected a balancing in the scales of our thoughts, I think I give Tomiyasu just a 7, 1 down.
Yeah, I think
because he got absolutely bombarded by Cucurella.
Yeah, it was the sort of first game where he actually had to defend with his feet
rather than aerially.
Yeah, you're right.
And it didn't go very
but
well.
On the whole, he's been outstanding. Yeah.
He's been a big part of the improvement that the team's made.
Ben White,
I give a 7 as well.
Okay.
I do think he's better than any defender we've got.
Not that that's a very high bar.
No, we've got because
the bar's being raised gradually though.
I mean, especially technically wise, as in Tierney's got absolutely nothing about him. I've lost a lot of patience with him. I know he's a fan favourite, but
we've touched on this, haven't we? We're in possession when he's asked to actually play further down the pitch. He just decides to lump it because he's not that technically gifted.
He shanks the ball in his shots. He's got absolutely no backlift on it. He just absolutely yoinks it. No, it always goes roasted.
Raf's sounding very cutthroat, but he's being completely true. Yeah. We have touched on it, but I haven't wanted to dive into it too much because we don't want to aggravate fans that are in love with him, because he does bring so many good qualities in the final third, step overs and crosses. It's essentially what his game is.
Yeah, there is a bit of frustration when it comes to Tierney, as there is, as we were talking about with Aubameyang, with sort of first touch and being able to link up.
But
with
the difference
players.
Is that Aubameyang does only one aspect of his role, and the rest of it he's incapable of doing. Whereas Tierney does two aspects of his role really well: his 1v1 defending superb, and his final third, getting past the man and crossing, is outstanding. Yeah. It's just the composure to play football on the ground when he's further down the pitch.
Yeah.
Back to Ben White.
I think he's been good. I think he's proved. I mean, when he came in, a lot of people said that he's got his technical ability, but he struggled dominating against defenders. But I think he's even won more headers than Gabriel.
Things
he's
been the other way around, actually.
Exactly.
Second year.
Gabriel's really improved his passing because he wasn't at it last season. And Ben White, I think, has been really good in the air, as well as his technical and his passing improving, which it inevitably will.
Okay. Gabriel, his partner.
I'll give him an 8. Yep. I think he's just as good, if not better. I've been surprised by his passing and his passing out the back. He seems he's willing to take that extra touch, a bit more composure. I think he's been really good. I've given him an 8.
Perfect. Kieran Tierney, let's not talk about him too much because we've just spent a little
just
bit of time.
Just slated him.
I mean,
but we love him. Though.
We love him. But he's also just off form, and that happens with him. And he's been really good despite his injuries every time he's played, and now he's off form, and so he's not as good.
He's still been defensively sound though.
Yeah. Exactly.
What would you give him?
Four.
Four for the last four.
He's been shit, man.
I think four's harsh. I'd say if we do six as an average, he'd be six.
I'll give him
five
a six.
An average, surely.
Okay, well, 5.5. I think
the way it works here, Raph, is we 1 to 5 is poor to below average, and then 6 to 10 is average to.
I think it's below average.
All right.
No,
that's fair.
No,
it's what I've come to podcast for.
It's a new opinion, really.
It's what they didn't see coming.
Thomas Partey.
I would give him a 6.
Okay. All right. I disagree.
Do you disagree?
I think that he's been an anchor for us. He does things that people don't necessarily tend to watch so much, where he drops in between the back two. When one centre back's being committed out wide, which covers so much transitional space, I think he's been the glue between midfield and attack. His passing angles are good. The way he receives the ball is amazing, and there's still a level to go, which is why I can understand you say 6, but I think 6 is harsh. I think he's been better in this last section of the season than he was by a mile last season. 100%.
I just sometimes see Partey in the game, and he is 5 levels above anyone else on that pitch, and I don't think he's reached that level of kind of opening his body, and he can beat 3 men with just that and that one touch. And I think he has been solid, and I think he has been a good anchor. And I think if Mamad Elneny had produced the performances, I'd be giving him an 8. But because I know Partey can get to that next level, I've maybe been harsh on him.
Maybe a
7's fairer then, but I understand what you're saying.
He's cursed by his own talent.
Exactly.
So Lokonga.
Lokonga, I mean, he's lost his place slightly over the last couple of games, but I think he's been good. I think he's defensively, he's quite vulnerable, but his passing is really good, and it has been throughout with a consistent level. I give him a 7.
Okay.
I think we should do the dream duo, our academy boys together, ESR and Saka. What are you saying for them?
I give ESR a 9. Yeah. He's been unreal. I think he's been our best player of the season. He drives with the ball. He's always been good. He's been what Saka was last season. When we haven't been playing well, he's still driven with the ball and has been able to make a chance out of nothing. I give Saka a 6.
I actually agree with the Saka rating. I think that he's just come to fruition a little bit of late in the last 2 games.
Yeah.
But even so, his whole performance for 90 minutes hasn't been
at the level that we're used to. But the Spurs performance,
but he's getting there. He had a traumatic summer. He's been too many minutes. Yeah. He's not been
terrible. He's getting there.
He's still scored a goal in the North London derby.
Exactly. So. I mean, which warrants a 10. Really.
So Odegaard.
Odegaard, I give a 7. Same thing with Partey. I think he is capable of more, but he's been solid. Maybe not so good in our last game against Brighton, hence why he was taken off. But he's always willing to take the ball, open up his body, and
takes so much responsibility.
It's similar to Ozil, where he just drop and just always take the ball and just dish it off left, right, and centre.
Right. Now, our captain Aubameyang, I don't think we need to spend too much time on this one because Raph's got the same opinion as us two.
Yeah.
For what we've said in the last few weeks, guys, it's going to be pretty similar.
A really bad footballer.
Yeah.
Is that the opinion?
We don't go as harsh as that, but. Essentially, it's
the truth, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's not very good at football. He's a great runner off the shoulder. He's got great athleticism.
Yeah.
His movement, he's got good anticipation and movement. So he's got fundamentals to be an under 9, but not really the fundamentals to play football.
I think he'll get 10, 15 goals this season. Not more than that, but I think he will get us goals, and those goals will be important. But I do want him outside right now.
So what rating would you give him?
I would give him a 5.
Okay.
I think I'll give him a 3. But let's move.
Okay, so actually just conscious that we haven't mentioned what the international special is going to be. So we'll introduce that now. We're going to do 2 games each, and they're going to be our favourite Arsenal memories growing up. I think it might...
Well, some of them. It's too hard to pick.
We won't include all of them, but I think it's going to be quite interesting given that we're a little bit younger. We're not just going to be sat here and... saying that, you know, we remember the Invincibles and the double games.
So the idea is that every international break will come up with a different format to make it a little bit more interesting for you guys.
Yeah.
Away from our normal structure. So next time it probably won't be a memory based episode, but it'll be something else. Yeah. Let's crack on with it.
So I'm going to start with my two games. Sure. Which means I actually get the pick of the bunch, which is quite nice. The first game I'm going to go with is I'm going to go with Arsenal 2, Chelsea 1 in the FA Cup final in 2017.
Okay, cool.
I like it.
That was just a fantastic day. We were actually there, luckily enough. We were in... we were sat in row 4, just behind where Giroud put the ball in for Ramsey to head home.
Right, yeah. Not the first time he's done that in the FA Cup final.
So, yeah, that day only slightly marred by me rupturing my cruciate ligament in the goal celebrations.
That's always going to happen.
For Ramsey's winner.
I'd be worried if you didn't.
I'd do it all again.
Yeah.
I'd do it all again. Were you two there?
No, I wasn't. I was watching at home with my dad.
Nice.
And it was a lovely, lovely day.
Yeah.
I've got a less memorable experience of that match because I don't remember anything about it apart from the highlights because I was somewhere, fuck knows where, on a train back from somewhere after an away game for West Ham. No way I could have gotten out of it. And I remember actually the few hours after the match finished, I got back to Highbury and Islington from a long train journey and I remember just Arsenal fans mobbed around the area.
Oh, it's lovely.
Mental. And then I just thought, okay, you know, happy times.
Highbury on cup final day is really, really nice. But yeah, I think that day for me was just a lot more special. I mean, one, because obviously it was amazing being there. But two, it just sort of seemed like everything that could go right on that day did go right. I remember on the way up listening to a few Chelsea fans that were singing about Conte having won the double already. Mm. And it was just lovely to beat them.
It was
lovely that it was them. And it was also just an amazing performance from two fantastic players, Sanchez and Ozil.
There were legendary
little battles.
Sort of backstory behind the final as well, wasn't there, with the holding Mertesacker. I know we played a back 3-1 when I was in there as well, but the holding Mertesacker sort of story. Neither of them really ever played for us properly.
Part of why it's gone in there is just for the moment where holding gets up from a little headlock with Diego Costa, and as he's walking back to get back in position, Holding just looks at Costa and goes, "You're a fucking psycho, mate."
Yeah.
Just love that.
And there's some players that Arsenal fans just all hate, and Diego Costa was one of them.
Yeah.
And so it's a beautiful moment when not only do you get the win, but you also get to...
Although I was commonly just referred to as Diego Costa as I was growing up through puberty at secondary school. Sort of like year 7 to 9.
Yeah, you do look a little bit like Diego Costa.
No, I don't. Let's not get into
the thing you do.
No, I really don't. Guys, I'm going to have to put a picture of myself up on the internet because I don't.
Little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, so for me, that one just has to go in there. One of the cup finals was going to go in there, and I think that one had to be it. I mean, the Villa day out was really, really great, but just because it was against Chelsea and because it was like a last-minute-ish winner.
And a derby.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
And we never beat Chelsea, or at that point we didn't.
Exactly.
We always do in FA Cup finals.
Yeah. Well, now we've become their bogey team a little bit, apart from
yes, bang to the Emirates.
Yeah. Okay, and my second game, just because I don't want to take some of the special games away from Harry and Raf, I'm going to go with one that I don't think they would have said, and I'm going to go with the 4-1 result at home to Norwich in the 13-14 season.
With
Aaron Ramsey's goals.
Super goal, the Wilshere
goal. Aaron Ramsey's goals and Jack Wilshere's goals and a Mesut Ozil header.
You mean the best goal in Premier League history?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That was a brilliant day. Just perfect, perfect Arsenal day.
Mm. Sunny day as well, right?
Really sunny, brilliant football goals. Ramsey's goals were both right in front of me.
That was his best season in Arsenal, wasn't it?
Oh, when What are you laughing at here, Harry?
Why does he have to say different? That was different gravy.
Well, that's just how Raf speaks.
No, I know, but
that's what Aaron Ramsey does to me.
Well, yeah, I was having this conversation with a couple of mates the other day, and I'd be interested to hear what you both think about it. Mm. I was having the argument of Luka Modric now, right? in his current form.
I think we've had this conversation.
Have we?
We've had it a couple of years ago where it was more applicable.
Well, all right.
I mean,
Aaron Ramsdale.
And Ramsey does also take him.
Yeah.
Ramsey does not take Luka Modric right now.
No.
13-14. That was the argument.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Yeah, he does take him, but he's still not as good as football.
I mean, no, of course not, but they're also different midfielders.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's nothing to do with the Norwich game. Sorry about that little sidetrack. But I assume both of you were there for that one.
I was there.
Oh, brilliant day.
The game didn't really... I don't really remember much from the game. I just remember the goal. And just thinking, this is the best goal ever.
Not all the goals.
No.
Ramsey.
I remember the Ramsey goal at the end where
He sat two down and then bent it into the bottom corner. It was a little bit like Henri's goal at home to Liverpool during the Invincible season.
It wasn't on that level.
It wasn't on that level, but the sort of sidestep and bend into the far corner reminded me a little bit of it. But yeah, I wanted to pick that game because it really sums up my Arsenal supporting life as a child.
I think also the Wilshere goal... mirrors or reflects the sort of philosophy of Arsenal.
Yeah, and it mirrors what we saw growing up. I mean, that was the best of a bunch, but there were quite a lot of goals like that
it was after obviously our period of winning trophies with Vieira and Henri and whatnot. I mean, we got into a period where we were even smaller, and it was just technical ability. It was the likes of Tommy Rosicky, Jack Wilshere, Aaron Ramsey, Santi Cazorla, and we used to get any big teams, but the technical ability when we played the small teams.
If you go to players like Abu Diaby, who's a bit taller, but you've got Matthew Flamini, who is an exceptional player, Song, and Alexander Chleb was an unbelievable footballer.
Clichy was good in his day as well.
Yeah. Well, we just had that level of... We had some really, really, really good footballers. Yeah. And although... We did get beaten by quite a lot of the bigger sides. We still got consistent top four football.
We took it for granted, though.
We did take it for granted. We had a few great years with the cup finals, and I mean 13-14. I still haven't really forgiven them for that whole cup final. That was very painful. I know we did win, but going 2-0 down was just unnecessary. And then we had the Villa and then the Chelsea. But yeah, it was just... Like, as a kid, you knew going to Arsenal you'd see...
You were guaranteed to see excellent football. Yeah. You weren't guaranteed to see results. Now you're guaranteed to see neither.
In terms of my two games, I'm going to start with Arsenal's 2-1 win at the Emirates against Leicester. Ooh. With our Danny Welbeck winner in the 94th minute,
I believe. Good choice.
I mean, it was... I mean, I say this, it was a very happy day... On the day, I mean, since that, after we bottled the league, the reason why I'm picking it was because that was the first time that I recall in my lifetime actually thinking that we could win the league.
Yeah.
So I had four games which I wanted to talk about, and I didn't know, so that's why I wanted to go last. And I'm quite happy you've chosen that, because that was one of them. Mm. I also agree, it was the first time and the only time in my life where at the end of a match I've been 100% certain that we're going to win the league title, we're going to be champions.
I wasn't 100%.
I was 100% certain, because I thought it's impossible not to win this, because there's no competition in this league. I knew we were close to the table. I still didn't see them as competition after that. I thought
we didn't really take them seriously until they were 3 points away from winning the league.
I'll never forgive us for not winning that title.
Yeah, we forget about Tottenham as well, but we really should.
No, but we were far ahead of Tottenham by Christmas, by January. Mm. And then that was when our bottling period was, because then we had a run of fixtures towards the end, where we eventually finished above them again.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, that game I always remember. I always say to people, that's the best Valentine's Day I ever had.
Oh,
14. Yeah, I was going to say it was my birthday game. Like, once a year, you sort of check which is the closest home for thing. Yeah, so I took two mates and stuff, and it was a great day.
Oh, it was I've never seen celebrations like that at the Emirates.
So good.
It was really good.
It's up there with a few other special Emirates games.
Yeah, but yeah, it was just that season was amazing. And as much as I, you know, can't forgive us for not winning that league, Leicester winning that league was just amazing. And I think actually...
No, I agree.
I mean, it was a cherry on top when Tottenham got battered 4-1 v Newcastle in the last game.
Oh, that was brilliant.
We were sent to Tottenham.
And we got scored again. A few then.
Yeah, and we were all at the... I remember being at the Emirates for that last game, and all you could hear was the sort of celebrations going around the ground for like the first goal. Mm. And then you'd hear a few like muffled again about like 3 minutes later. And we all thought, oh, it's just people reacting late to their first goal.
Yeah.
But it just turned out to be their second and their third. Yeah. And I kept running up to watch, to look at Gillette Soccer Special and run back down and tell everyone the score. It was great.
Look, when I said I did agree, it was a fairy tale Leicester winning the league. And
yeah.
There was some enjoyment in it. But at the same time, when you haven't won a league for a decade at that point, was it? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Over a decade, 12 years at that point. It was just, I still find it unforgivable that you can't win a league when the points accumulated necessary to win that title would be what you needed to come fourth the year before. I don't see how we didn't manage to do it. The only other year where I think that we should have won the league, there are 2 years that I can remember watching Arsenal where I think we were the best team in that league.
07-08?
Yeah, when Eduardo broke his leg away at Birmingham. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, back to the game itself. I mean, it was that Danny Welbeck had injured as always, come back from 3-4 months out. And he came onto that game, and it was meant to be. Mesut Ozil pinged it in.
Oh, beautiful.
It was prime
just a perfect ball.
I actually remember Danny Welbeck posted on Instagram afterwards, after like not posting for ages, and then he just put, it was like a black post, and it said, "There's always light at the end of the tunnel."
Yeah, and that was when all those on Instagram and whatnot, it just had like Welbeck with his like sitting on a throne, and it was like the second coming of Danny.
Yeah, okay,
Jesus is king.
It's like, this is where his Arsenal career didn't quite turn up that way.
Yeah, not quite. He's doing bits of Brighton.
I always separate point, but in terms of Danny Welbeck, me and my dad always have this discussion, and we always think, how different would Danny Welbeck's career have been if, I don't know if you remember, it was his first home game. It was against Man City. We drew 2-2.
Alexis Sanchez scored a volley.
How different would Danny Welbeck's career at Arsenal have been if that chip in the first half, instead of hitting the inside of the post, would have gone in?
Yeah, massive.
Not going to lie to you, I don't remember it, but I bet it would have been a game changer.
But, you know, like having that debut goal, I just always think it's going to like...
Yeah, you're thinking of the Community Shield goal, Harry.
Am I?
Yeah.
Okay.
But when you talked about that volley, that's when Alexis took his shirt off.
That was 2-2. Jack Wilshere scored like a really tightly narrowed angle.
Yeah, and he chipped it. Yeah,
and he chipped Joe Hart, and then Alexis Sanchez scored a volley.
The second game I'm going to talk about is away at Fulham, 5-1.
I was there, by the way.
It was also a brilliant day for DT because Aubameyang hugged him and took his hat off or something. Unlucky. I mean, part of the reason why it was same as the Leicester game. It was one of those times where I thought we had hope, and a lot of Arsenal fans thought, "Oh, we're gonna start breaking back and doing what we did back in the early 2000s. And I remember the away fans saying, "We've got our Arsenal back." Obviously, Unai Emery's after that did a shocking job and drove the club backwards, and I wasn't happy with him. We didn't play good football. But at that point, I thought it was a good marking point for having hope and having that same hope. And it was a brilliant performance with some really good goals.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that Aubameyang... No, the Ramsey goal where he...
the team move was unbelievable.
It was unreal.
So lovely touch from Lacazette with a 1-2 with Bellerin down the right side. And then Ramsey just makes a beautiful run. Mkhitaryan plus a flick into Aubameyang who cuts it. It was a lovely goal.
Yeah.
It was a lovely afternoon. It was one of my first like proper away days when I was a bit older, because I didn't do much when I was younger. I went with my cousin who's a Fulham fan. We actually sat in the Fulham end because it's the only place I could get tickets.
Yeah.
It's really weird away at Craven Cottage. The away end is next to a neutral end, so half of one side is like mixed, and then it's the away end there.
Yeah,
and obviously the rest of the stadium's all home end. It's a lovely stadium.
It's really nice.
When they turn up, it bounces as well. But no, the football we played was really good. Lacazette's goals were great. Aubameyang scored a few good goals, I think, that game, and it was all.
It was also just quite nice after. It was a bit of a dodgy start to the season.
Yeah.
Didn't
it kickstart our 20?
It kickstarted our 23 game.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that was a really good day.
I remember hearing
that as a choice
after Ramsey's goal. I remember hearing we've got our Arsenal back, and Unai Emery's red and white army.
Yeah,
and
goosebumps, really.
Boy, did that go downhill quickly.
Yeah, exactly. It was a bit premature.
It would go, like, extremely.
I like how Raf's gone for two games, though, that were sort of emblems of hope and sort of genuine belief.
I've gone for themes.
Yeah, you have, actually.
I've gone for themes.
Yeah. You've really thought about this, and that's...
I actually thought the Fulham game on the way up here, but...
oh, really?
Yeah, but then I thought, well, that's a theme, and, I mean, look how it's turned out.
And we kicked on from
unbelievable.
So I'm going to be a bit cheeky, just before I get into my two games. Since Raf talked about his two games being thematic...
Oh, you're not giving yourself an extra, are you?
I'm going to very briefly just say the two thematically crazy games I want to mention was Reading 5, Arsenal 7 away in the League Cup. And I also went to Anfield a few years ago and we lost on penalties, but it was a 5-5 draw.
So there's a theme in that sense. No, craziness.
Mental. Right. We don't have to talk about that much longer. Because they're not my two games, but I thought they have to get a mention in there.
Fair enough.
Right. My favourite Arsenal game is at Wembley, 2014 FA Cup final, Arsenal 3, Hull 2. It was just, what a day. I mean...
I can't believe he's chosen this one.
It healed all these scars I had that I thought it made impossible to heal. After going to Arsenal against Birmingham in the League Cup final when I was younger, and I made like a tin foil cup, and I remember I stamped on it and I threw it down the stands, and that final
actually,
in 2014.
Me and Harry went to primary school together, and we weren't particularly close. We played football together, but it's not like we're mates as we are now. And one of the only memories I have from Costa at primary was straight after that Birmingham. I've never actually told Costa this.
Really?
It's not a big story anyway. But, pretty dull, but. We were taking our cloaks off for Harry Potter now. We were taking our jackets off, and I was making fun of Harry for crying after the Birmingham game. And he was like, I'm not afraid of crying, it's my passion.
Did he have an accent back then as well?
Okay, there you go. That's just me.
That sums him up, this is the passion.
Yeah. No, I genuinely can't believe you've chosen that game, because I will never, ever forgive that Arsenal side for that first 15 minutes against
Brilliant. I mean, it wasn't brilliant.
The first 15 minutes,
it wasn't brilliant, but it set it up for its glorious
day. It was so painful.
2-0 down, and my body felt numb. I felt really like frozen, like surely this fucking shit isn't going to happen again. You know, Birmingham, now Hull.
It was not glorious.
It was a wonderful day. And then as soon as Santi Cazorla, is he left-footed, is he right-footed? We don't know, but he pops it in the top corner of his right foot from about 40 yards out.
But were you not just completely frozen with nerves the whole game?
I was until Santi scored that free kick, and as soon as he put it in top bins, I knew we were winning. Like, you don't score that type of goal without coming back and winning a cup final. It's just, I knew something. It was a magical day.
Well, but
that moment was just magical, that Santi Cazorla free kick.
I mean, it was magical because we won, right? But then, if you're looking at, like, cup finals, do you not then just look at Villa and think...
No,
shit.
That was a bit shit.
Really?
Yeah, because it was such a rollover, it's got nothing...
Oh, it was a perfect day.
I was got that on toast.
What, Villa? Yeah.
You're just talking about 3-2, 4-0. You prefer, like, a 4... It could have been a Sunday league game, that Villa game.
Yeah, but a 4-0 in a cup final was just fantastic.
It is if you're playing like Chelsea or United.
But the feeling you get after coming back from 2-0
down is glorious.
God.
It's unreal. It's
what and then I remember we put Sonogo up top.
We started
launching balls up to Giroud and Sonogo, and
Didn't the ox hit the angle?
Yeah, of course.
He smacked the angle of the...
Crossbar.
Yeah.
He did, yeah.
Oh.
But when we started throwing in... Mertesacker up top with Sonogo and Giroud towards the last 10 minutes, I thought, I've arrived at an English Cup final properly here. No, it was brilliant. And then Koscielny scrambled in an equaliser, and I was certain we were going to win there. There was no doubt in my mind at that point.
What about when Fabianski came rushing out of his goal?
Yeah, that bit just, you know, my heart sort of pounded out for a second.
Yeah, a little bit of doubt there.
And then, you know, that Giroud flick and then Ramsey outside of the boot.
It was a nice goal.
It was a beautiful goal, and I just remember him sort of lying down and sort of there was a look of relief on his face.
The noise was just relief as well.
I feel like his celebration really reflected what it meant to be an Arsenal fan on the day where it was a 9-year trophy drought, and it was kind of like, finally, we've done it, we can kickstart now. Of course, we haven't kickstarted in terms of trophies at a higher level, but we won a few FA Cups.
Yeah.
My second game is the best game at the Emirates that there's ever been.
Yeah, I was leaving this for one of you two to do it.
Yeah, I was quite surprised that nobody snatched it up.
It's... I've actually gone for 5-1 Fulham ahead of it for some reason. Yeah.
You know, each their own.
Long it's all about 4-1 Norwich as well.
Yeah.
We love a theme on this podcast. Anyhow, of course it's Arsenal 2, Barcelona 1. Champions League. Group stage, I believe.
No.
Was it knockout?
No, round 16.
Oh, so we lost overall then.
Yeah.
Is it the same year where the Van Persie...
That's when he got sent off.
Sent off with the whistling. Right, okay. Still the best game of the Emirates though.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. Oh. I've never heard the Emirates like that before. There are only some games in the last sort of decade that rival it. All the Spurs ones at home, the 2-5-2, the one a few weeks ago, the 4-2 from 3 or 4 years ago, the Chelsea with the Ozil shot when he volleyed it into the ground. Those games sort of rival it, but it still wasn't as loud and electric. It's the first time I've heard the chant, "We're by far the greatest team the world has ever seen," and actually believed it.
It
held its full value, that song, that day.
Yeah, also it's just, as well as beating Barcelona, being able to actually see that Barcelona side in the flesh as well. I mean, I would have been perfectly happy if we'd have drawn or lost that game and I'd have seen Messi and David Villa and Iniesta and Xavi.
Not only did we beat the best, in my opinion, ever football team, Jack Wilshere, a 19-year-old kid, has taken the game at throttle to the best ever midfield in history.
Yeah,
I mean, Busquets, Iniesta and Xavi are unreal. I could watch them in my sleep. Like, and Wilshere took the ball.
can I just pick you up on watching them in your sleep?
What does that mean?
It's a metaphor for dreaming.
So,
because they're dreaming.
Right. I don't think that's a metaphor that anyone else has ever used.
Well, this is what we do on this podcast. We come up with new phrases.
Okay. I think you've got yourself out of trouble there.
I'm a junior gunner, guys. I'm one step ahead of the game. Right?
You're a junior gunner?
Yeah, you know when you get the junior gunner packs and it says one step ahead of the game?
Oh, right.
Yeah, there you go.
He's done well to redeem himself, but he's started a shot.
Listen, I've had everything under control there.
Okay.
Anyway,
moving onwards. So, yeah, Wilshere was superb, wasn't he? The way he received the ball, like he was playing for their team, which is in a red shirt. It was incredible.
I mean, I'm going to bring it back to Aaron Ramsdale and the fact that the way he celebrates goals the same way in that game.
Chesney just gets
on his knees and he's fucking...
Oh, the Chesney celebration.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
And wasn't that the one where he hugged the ball boy as well?
Yeah.
I'm not surprised. Fantastic. It was the happiest he's ever been.
Yeah. Of course.
Happiest.
And then the sort of... The Van Persie scored it was a world-class goal. It was a volley from a narrow angle. Victor Valdez had no chance. Like, who would have seen it coming?
But nobody also, would have attempted it. It was outrageous. A brilliant Arshipping goal as well.
Lovely counter-attack.
I always remember the commentary from that game was just, once he put it in, it was I can't remember who the commentator was.
Martin Tyler.
Was it Martin Tyler? And then he said, a Barcelona goal from Arsenal.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh. I love that.
Oh, man.
Goosebumps.
Yeah. Okay, so we've left ourselves a little bit of time for an honourable mention section, and the two that I can think of are both defeats.
Right, that's good from you.
Yeah, which is a bit...
It's unorthodox.
Yeah, it is unorthodox. The first one I think it was 3-1 to United.
Home or away?
Home.
Okay, did Rooney score on the counter?
I don't think so. It was when De Gea made about 16
saves. This is fairly recent. They had Lukaku and Lingard.
Yeah,
she got the record for the most saves in the game.
Yeah, it was just the most unbelievable game of football. The Emirates was so
well.
That was a game I really, really enjoyed. I mean, at the end of the game, obviously, really angry that you've lost. But just looking back on it,
it's one of the only times you can say we've lost, but we can deal with it because we were so much better.
Oh, it was just a fantastic game of football. And then the second one I'm going to mention is very weird. Actually, I've got two more. The second one I'm going to mention, also very weird. We lost 2-1 at home to Watford.
Yes, was there. I remember it was so strange. I remember Herrera Gomez just giving it the boom.
Yeah. We were 2-0 down at half time. Then Iwobi scored.
Yeah.
And then Lucas Perez hit the bar with, I think, probably the greatest shot I've ever seen. It was nearly like it's hit the bar and
just
sort
briefly,
of bounced.
As you said, Lucas Perez, I thought that ridiculous volley he scored
against Bournemouth.
Against Bournemouth. and Giroud doing his scorpion kick celebration as it was about 3 days after.
That was really annoying.
That's what bought Alexis Sanchez the ticket to Manchester, because he was absolutely livid.
Yeah, he was,
5 minutes left, yeah. And he was fucking doing his fucking ballet.
That wasn't ideal.
Did you have one more then?
Well, so that Watford game, I don't know why I enjoyed that. It was sort of...
I didn't enjoy it after
we'd lost, but I just remember sort of like having a lot of fun at the game.
Okay.
Because it was a season where we'd sort of come back so many times. Where we'd come back so many times. As soon as Iwobi scored that goal, I just remember like the Emirates really getting behind everyone. For that Iwobi goal, the guy that sits behind us, Fat Harry, who has a hot dog stand, I remember him very distinctly. He kissed me on the lips and then whispered in my ear, "We're going to win the league." And then we lost 2-1, but that was just something I really enjoyed.
It stands out.
Yeah. And then the last one I'm going to mention is a win. I'm going to have to pick between these, but...
I've got one as well, so...
Okay, so I'm going to pick there's a 3-1 home game against Leicester.
Fine.
Where Ozil just put out an absolute masterclass.
Yeah, I remember that game. It was unreal.
And I think that was one of the greatest nights.
That was also prime Unai Emery.
Yeah.
We had faith that we were going to get something special under that game.
But yeah, just the three goals in that game, I thought... are well worth the
mention. It's not just the dummy and then the Lacazette touch and then Ozil's flick for Aubameyang's goal. It's the first one where he plays where he plays an incisive pass into Bellerin.
Yeah.
Who then plays it across the goal for Aubameyang I think. But also his first goal, where
his first goal was fantastic.
Yeah, it run across your body, one touch.
It's the same goal he scored against Napoli, his first goal for Arsenal, where he's let it.
He's just sort of outside spin.
Exactly, so much panache on the ball.
Yeah.
Right, just before we move on then, I'd like to mention one more, which was, I think I was in year four, so quite a long time ago. It was 1-0 at home to Leeds in a cup replay where Thierry Henry's come back on
loan.
That was about 20 minutes to go.
I remember the whole
stadium, must be the first time the Emirates, the whole stadium at full throttle just gone, Thierry Henry, the charm in full effect.
And he just went up and gave Arsene a massive hug.
So good that me and Abdulaziz in year four had to include it in our weekly magazine that we did.
Oh, really?
It's got into the weekly magazine.
Thierry's never forgot that.
It's probably the highlight of his career.
Okay, so given that it's an international special, right? Well, international break special. I thought it would be a perfect time to introduce what I think is going to become a regular section in our podcast. And so this week I've done it, and essentially what we're going to do is either me or Harry every week are going to research a player that most fans probably won't know about that have an amazing backstory
from any period of the Arsenal.
So we're talking like you can pre-World War One or whatever.
Pre-professional era.
Yeah. So this week the player that I've chosen is Peter Story.
Sure.
And I don't know.
Yeah. I was going to say, thanks, he has a good story.
Yeah, he does have a good story. I don't know whether he's
good for us.
Yeah.
Great minds think alike, you know.
I don't know whether either of you have ever heard of him.
No.
So Peter Story.
The story's a real page turner.
What, can we stop with the story puns?
You also winked on page turner.
I did not wink.
I've winked on page turner.
You've winked.
The wrong time to wink.
Yeah. If anything, you wink on Story.
Yeah. That's his name.
Yeah.
But I didn't wink. But B, wouldn't you wink on Turner?
Why?
Why Turner?
His name's Story.
Yeah. Oh, but you've gone page turner.
Yeah, but the page turner part's not the pun.
Pardon?
The page turner part's not the pun.
No, I know, but it's kind of the nicest. I don't know.
Alright, anyway. Okay, so Peter Story, he was a double winner for Arsenal. He was essentially responsible for Arsenal's first double in 1971.
71?
Yeah.
Did we not win a double in the 30s?
Not the conventional.
Not the conventional double,
right? But yeah, so he never scored, ever. And he scored 2 in the FA Cup semi-final. Right, so I'm sorry if this is a little bit bad quality, but I'm very conscious that in editing this, I've failed to mention
that one of Peter Story's two goals that he scored in the cup semi-final, which was a draw, that kept our double hopes alive. We were 2-0 down, and one of the goals he scored, never scored for Arsenal, was a late penalty that he had to take against none other than Gordon Banks in goal, and he's tucked it away, and the game finished 2-2, and we then went on to win the replay. So I think that's an impressive detail that I failed to mention that I thought I should include.
Double winner with Arsenal, England international. But what happened to him after was very interesting. So I'm just going to get my my notes out here. So Peter Story, after retiring from football, he was convicted of quite a few criminal offences.
Was he going wrong?
He little bit, yeah. So his first one was keeping a brothel. He had a brothel.
Right.
Which was
during
one of
his playing career. Or did
no, no. This was just this was after his retire. This was one of his hobbies after he retired.
Right, as you do.
So yeah, so he had a brothel, and the most interesting one he was jailed for was he was jailed for 3 years for dealing in counterfeit antique gold coins.
Right. Explain.
So I don't really know how he's done this, but on Peter Story's Wikipedia page, which is probably not something you want to see for an ex-professional footballer, there is a section just called criminal convictions, which probably isn't ideal. But yeah, so he essentially, when dealing in these coins, he was helping local gangsters who were called the Barry Brothers, and he was helping them to counterfeit money by providing finance and storage of cast dye. I don't really know what that means.
That's some sort of substance they've used in their drugs they sell.
Something, I don't know. Anyway, so he was then arrested for dealing in these counterfeit coins. And then whilst he was on bail, he set up a brothel called the Calypso Massage Parlour. And that was just to try and raise enough money to flee to Spain.
Right.
That was the only point of the brothel.
Money from his playing career?
Nope. No, no. He used most of his money from his playing career to buy a pub.
Okay.
The brothel, I imagine.
Yeah, I don't really. Anyway, but Peter Story is a very interesting man. So he was handed a 12-month sentence after the brothel incident. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he was handed a 12-month sentence for his brothel incident. And then after that, he also was, so that 12 months was a suspended sentence. And while he was doing the suspended time before he started the 12-month period, he stole two cars he had on hire whilst he was running his minicab firm.
Right.
Which he set up. Yeah, he has a minicab firm.
I like it.
Seems like a man that can't relax.
Yeah, I don't really know what was going on with him. So then he had the time on unemployment benefits, and he worked on a market stall in Portobello Road. And then in 1990, this was his last bit in jail, he was jailed for 28 days for attempting to import 20 pornographic videos from Europe, which he had hidden in a spare tyre.
Ah, oh, that's clever though. Give him that.
Yeah, but yeah, they found it in the spare tyre. And then after his release in 1990, he worked as a minicab driver again in Islington. And then he went to Istanbul in 1995 and worked as a chauffeur for a Turkish gangster, I think.
Right.
And then he moved to southern France in 2004, and he sold all of his football memorabilia and medals for about $20,000, and he's been living off that ever since.
To this day?
To this day.
$20,000 in what year?
2004.
That's not enough money to live off, is it? Well, southern France.
He's still alive. So, yeah, Peter, alive. If you're listening to this,
get on the podcast.
Get in touch.
You could be the next special guest in
exactly.
The next interlock.
But yeah, very interesting story.
It is indeed.
Good
what
one,
a man.
Yeah.
And just to keep this episode in some sort of context, we should probably talk about a few of the international games just before we end. So Harry, I think you had something.
Oh, so the England game, of course, you have to consider opposition being very, very poor.
Yeah.
But Foden was outstanding.
Oh, he's so good.
He's showing glimpses of what he could be at the highest level in that number eight position.
So was Saka, to be fair.
Really, I actually thought Saka was kind of quiet, didn't really do anything all game, but his goal, the touch, and the finish on the volley was amazing. But no, I wanted to talk about Foden because I thought he was just amazing, superb to watch. I mean, scary, like how good he was.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you wanted to touch on the England game? There's a bit of a...
No, not really. I mean, I was quite interested. I think there was a stat that one of the commentators said that was, I think England's last five away fixtures at Andorra had all been 0-0 at half-time.
Really?
Yeah. Which...
Or was it 2-0 the other day or 1-0?
Yeah, 2-0. Mm-hmm. So, you know, some improvement there.
Also, you mentioned Sancho. I thought he was quite good.
Sancho was good, yeah. And, you know, he's a really, really good player. I don't doubt that.
I mean, when you think of those young players, Foden and Sancho are a level above. And I love Sancho to pieces, but they're both miles better than him.
Their technical ability is through the roof.
Yeah, I think you'd struggle to find players that come close to them.
Yeah. So moving on to the Nations League, which is caused some discussion in terms of like whether people like it or not. I quite like it because I think it's more interesting and the quality of game's better than just friendlies.
I'll tell you who doesn't like it, that I was seeing this morning, Thibaut Courtois.
Okay. Who
absolutely
That was more so the third.
I mean, he's got so much shit though, because in all those tournaments, there's always a third place player.
There's a third place playoff in the World Cup.
It's always been the case. And yeah, football is all about money, but he was chatting that as us.
Yeah.
He was sort of extracting a point about the second World Cup, the biannual World Cup idea and stuff like that, and applying it to something which.
I think everything had come to a head in his head, and he just decided that he'd blurt it all out.
He just wanted to vent, basically.
Yeah.
But no, the semi-final between Belgium and France was unreal.
Yeah,
it was brilliant game of football. Belgium were excellent. They were by far the better team.
And Lukaku's goal, oh my God.
Oh, that was really good.
Yeah.
Ooh, so good.
Yeah. Oh, just the way he plays. Oh, I love the way he plays.
Do you? I find it quite amusing because his touch is awful, but then also he just... attracts from all players around him, which creates space around him.
I don't think his touch is as bad as people say it is.
It's not as bad as it was a few years ago. It's not as bad as it was a few years ago, but it's still
the way he sort of,
it's okay now.
He takes it, having pinned the defenders, and then sort of like spins.
Well, because it creates space for the wing-backs and stuff to get around. It's really clever.
That's why it works so well in that five-back with Chelsea, when you've got Alonso and James, who are just suited for just getting behind.
Yeah. It's like the goal they did to Arsenal. Yeah, exactly. When, you know, he pinned, like, holding Amari, who, you know, very naively got trapped
in. James is just right down the outside.
But no, in that second half, you saw a Galactico-style French side just come out with individual quality and just...
I mean, like,
they were just playing the fire.
I'm not sure what...
Well, in the final?
Yeah.
Well, I was in the semi-final about Mbappe ripping a few players
apart.
Benzema's first touch swivel on his weak
foot. Benzema's fantastic.
He's right up there. He's arguably the best striker in the world.
The thing is he actually always has been up.
Because he did so much selfish work when he played with Ronaldo.
Selfless.
That's the one, sorry guys. Yeah selfless. No, but it's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
So much of what Ronaldo's done is thanks to Benzema.
And then the final was also quite exciting.
I actually missed most of it. I caught the last 20 minutes coming back to work.
But yeah, there was just a very clear offside goal.
What is this stupid new rule or something
I didn't actually know what the argument was there.
So the argument is that, so he's offside, but because Garcia's got a little touch
on the ball, made
it's
like
a second phase of play, which means he's onside because it's Garcia to Mbappe rather than the France player.
Okay.
Garcia. But the thing is, I can understand that if Garcia's changed the direction of the ball big time.
Yeah.
It's moved about, I don't know, 20 centimetres.
Yeah, it was more of a deflection on the pass
So therefore it should be treated as a, like the on-target, off-target thing with own goals. Like if it's on-target and there's a deflection, it's still your goal. If it's off-target,
with those rules, it's just got to be more open to interpretation. In that sense, the ref should see that it isn't a new phase of play.
Yeah,
it's barely
exactly.
towards Garcia. And in which case you can get the right decision.
Absolutely. Yeah. But no, France are looking good ahead of the World Cup. In my opinion, they're still right up there as favourites.
I guess so. But even though there have been a few games, I think we'd all be very glad to see Premier League football come
back. I can't wait for the Arsenal to be back.
Yeah.
It's going to be massive.
So we've come to the end of our first ever international episode, break episode, and...
We should probably stop calling it that, actually.
No, because it's more of just a special episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've come to the end of our first special episode on Left on Red. And it was a great laugh, it was good fun talking about some memories of Arsenal back in the day, but I think I speak on behalf of everyone when we say we're much more excited to start to get talking about what's going to happen now and in the future with Arsenal, starting with Palace at home on Monday night.
Yeah.
Not this Monday, the one in 2 weeks.
Yeah, we've got a while to go still.
Yeah, so we'll see you then.
Take care, guys.
Cheers.